Welcome to episode 298 of the In Squash podcast. And before we get started here with today's episode, I just want to start off with how deeply saddened I was to hear of the passing of RJ Mitchell this past weekend. Obviously, to many of us, the news came as a complete shock. RJ and I had become fairly good friends over the last couple of years via the podcast. And without question, he was the most passionate interview that I've had each of the three times he's been on. And we spoke less than 2 months back. And, you know, what was really exciting to me at the time was we were talking about him getting back on the squash court. He'd suffered from a few niggles here and there over the years. I think maybe hip surgeries, knee surgeries. And if memory serves, he was kind of suggesting that he was looking to get back on the squash court. And, for this, obviously, a complete shock to me, the news that just came out of his passing. It was a heart attack, I believe, a massive heart attack that he suffered from. But anyways, we talked a lot off of podcasts over the past several years on our mutual, we have a mutual passion for squash and the sweet science of boxing. He loved his boxing, and he wrote, I think, extensively about that in the past. And he was really excited about his new role there with Squash Player Magazine and what he'd done with Squash Mad. He was really proud of that and everything that he'd done in the past. And so I just want to, express my deepest, very deepest condolences going out to his family, and just want to say rest in peace, RJ. Now, today on the podcast, Luke Butterworth, a young man who's headed up U.S. Squash's junior national team for the past several years. And I've heard of the great work that he's done from several people, including the likes of people like Rob Owen, in fact, spoke highly of Luke's work with the junior program there in the U.S. Amongst other people, I think the boys over at Squash Radio speak highly of him fairly often as well. Well, I finally got him on the podcast, and really looking forward to fleshing several things out with him. But before we talk to Luke, let's talk Open Squash. We're growing the game. We're growing the game. And making squash more accessible and more affordable for everyone is the Open Squash mission. Open Squash sponsors the very best in the game right now, including recent winner of the German Open, and she's on into the next round of Elgin as we speak. World number 6, Gina Kennedy. Victor Quin, who had an early exit there in Elguna, but he'll be back. We know that. He's world number 11 at the moment. World number 92, Hannah Craig, making inroads, and she's on tour as a full-time touring pro now for Open Squash. And it goes without saying, the very best in the game right now, Open Squash, is Ali Farag. In fact, Ali, along with the Harvard head coach Mike Way, have taken on roles as senior advisors for Open Squash. I've mentioned this in the past, so that really bodes well in terms of what they have coming up here in the summer with their summer camps. The camps will be headed by the aforementioned legendary Harvard head coach Mike Way, along with former world number one and Drexel head coach Johnny White, Gina Kennedy, Victor Quin, and several other highly respected coaches will be there, including the likes of Amr Khalifa and Peter Creed, who are going to be on the podcast in the very near future. Hopefully, we're going to have Amr on next week. I'm really looking forward to that. Haven't spoken to him before, but again, another one of those guys that we've heard quite a bit about, not only as a coach, but as a player as well. So, and don't forget about the Open Squash Summer Camp. You can visit www.opensquash.org and sign up for the camp that fits your skill set needs. Also, Open Squash is very excited to be partnering up with American squash court manufacturer Sunrise Courts. Jordan Aldrich and his team at Sunrise will be ready to help you with your squash courts needs. Check out the website at sunrise-courts.com and avail yourself of a free court setup estimate, or just ask them any question that you might have about court setup. That's sunrise-courts.com. Now, here we go. Looking forward to having Luke Butterworth on here on episode 298 in Squash Podcast. Well, Luke, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast, and sorry it's taken so long because I know you've done really good work with the junior program there with the U.S. national team for the past several years. I'm not exactly sure how long you've been in that role, but yeah, it's great having you on. And how's everything going today? It looks like you've got, does it look like sunny skies there or overcast or?
It is very sunny skies today. Well, that's one of the things I like the most about the US is that even on like kind of dull, colder days, it's still blue skies. It's not like the north of England where I grew up in Huddersfield, where there's a lot of grey clouds and dull atmosphere. It definitely it's really nice over here where you get the sun shining all the time.
Yeah, I hear a lot about I live in the UAE, and there are a lot of expats from the UK, and all they ever talk about is how terrible the weather is back home, so.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, growing up in the north of England, didn't really have like the sun, sea, and sand. It's coming over here. I've been actually been in the States now for 15 years, so I've kind of come accustomed to the life and the climate over here.
Right, you've been in are you in New York or that part of the States, like East Coast?
Yeah, I'm on the East Coast. I'm actually in Connecticut. So when I first moved over, I moved to a little city called Stamford, Connecticut. It's about 40 minutes north of Manhattan.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah,
It's
and
also
now
close
I
there.
will I say again.
It's every like in that part of the US that eastern seaboard, all the cities, you don't realize it, but they're relatively close to one another.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've been here like 15 years. So I started out in Stamford. I was in Stamford for about a year or two working. Then I went to Greenwich, Connecticut. I was working in a country club for about 4 years, and then I've been in my current role now for 10 years. And yeah, I mean, from a squash piece, when I first moved over, there was only like a few, maybe four or five different clubs and stuff that you could play at. Whereas now, it's like a hotbed. There's like 20 to 30 clubs. You go to Manhattan, there's squash everywhere. You go in local here in Connecticut and Greenwich, Stamford, Norwalk, Portchester. Like, there's so many different places that you can play squash now. It's like thriving, which is it's a cool place to be for sure.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit more later. I wouldn't mind though if you could just lay out your backstory. I mean, I know you played at a good level back in the UK. So just sort of where did you get your start in your squash and as a player, how far did that take you?
So I actually was a bit of a late starter to squash. Growing up, I was all about football. I was my journey was on my vision in my life was that I was going to be a professional footballer and played for multiple clubs like Huddersfield, Leeds, Bolton, like a few other teams
Who
like
do you
that.
support?
I'm a big Huddersfield Town fan, which is a very sensitive subject right now because we might be getting relegated at the
Are you
weekend.
guys in the Premiership or the
No,
Champions?
we were in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago, but now no, we're in the Championship and we're on our way to League One. So
Yeah, one of my good buddies here, he's a huge and I don't know if, I mean, I know the big names, but it's the first time I'd ever heard of it, Nottingham Forest.
that's another sense. This conversation is going south quickly because they beat us in the playoff final to get to the Premier League. So yeah,
But he's
the
not a
less we
happy
talk
camper
about,
right now either,
yeah,
as you can well imagine.
I know, yeah, the less we talk about Huddersfield Town and football, probably for the best. But yeah, no, growing up, I was definitely playing football all the time. That was my first love and the direction that I felt my life was going. And then picked up squash around like 13, 14 years old. My mom was a hairdresser part time, and I kind of just tagged along here and then. She was cutting some lady's hair whose son was gonna go play squash, and I just went and with him and kind of got into it. And just the coach at the club was a guy called Andy Learoyd, who became a pivotal figure in my junior career and got me started and really got me passionate about the game. And then I got injured playing football when I was about 16, and I'd played some squash tournaments. On the weekends I wasn't playing football and stuff, and I was all about it. If I wasn't playing football, I was playing squash. So I kind of lived at the squash club. And then kind of around 16, I fully dived into squash. I was working. I started like my own little racket restringing business in Huddersfield, where I'd go to all the different clubs, pick up the rackets, go home, string them. That would pay for me to do a lesson and go travel to a tournament or whatever it may be. And then that's when I got my first job with working in the pro shop at Queen's Club in Halifax with Paul Hornsby. Because I left school at 16 to play to then basically play squash full time. And do coaching and do all the rest of it. So I kind of dived in quite early, and just played as much squash as I possibly could. I used the coaching piece from an early age, helping out the club at Queen's and at my home club of Huddersfield and a few other places, to help, finance the whole situation. I played a lot of junior tournaments in the UK. I did some European tournaments. I even traveled to South America, which was pretty cool. Which again, kind of, you'll as we talk more, you'll learn that the South American connection and I is very, very strong. But then, when I moved to the States at 19, I played on the PSA. I always say that I was a part-time professional, because the coaching piece was so important to me, not only from what I really enjoyed coaching, but from a financial piece, because I needed that kind of funding for my own funding to be able to travel, because I didn't really come from a wealthy background or anything like that, where I had the luxury of that.
So
So
you got
I
into coaching like that at that sort of as sort of a big in a big way when you were quite young.
I was doing like school. It's funny. One of my first jobs, I was coaching a school session when I was about 16 or 17, and the kids in the group were 16 or 17. So it was. I had to try and find my authoritative figure of people of my own age and my own peers. So I always think there's some funny stories behind that. But yeah, like I got into it very early and I took to it, and I really enjoyed passing on knowledge, and I found it a very rewarding job when people enjoyed the sessions and had fun. And from the first point, it was like I just wanted people to have fun, right? I didn't have much knowledge of the game like I do now, back then, but it was more like I just enjoyed how people enjoyed, what the sessions were like, and they were playing squash, and it gave me a bit of a buzz. And for me, that kind of led me more into the coaching piece and how it kind of got me to America too.
We'll talk about this a bit later, but I think that's something in the squash skills stuff that you put out recently. That's something that you really highlighted was the importance of teaching when you have juniors. A junior program is fun has to be the first and foremost, I think. So maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But just in terms of your backstory, I mean, you mentioned your first coach Andy at the I forget his last name, Andy at the fir at your first club. And perhaps the other coaches, what type of impact did they have on you? Obviously, they must have had a huge impact be in terms of not only on your squash, but obviously on your coaching.
Yeah, no. Andy Learoyd was pivotal to me. He was my coach at Huddersfield Squash Club, where I first picked up a racket, and he really, again, he was the one who really made me love the game. I used to love going to watch him play league matches, and he'd take me up and down the country. I went to watch him playing like the British Open qualifying around everywhere, and him and his friend Dave Barnett, who's from Newcastle, like they took me all over, and I used to watch them play in the leagues, and then I would be part of the team as I developed, and it was just quite the journey. And then when I started to play kind of full time around that 16, 17 age, I then moved. I went over to Pontefract, and I learned a lot from Malcolm Woolstrop. And he actually never called me by my first name for a few years. He used to call me the boy from Huddersfield. And he just taught me so much about like discipline and, you know, values. And I think he really appreciated as well where I'd come from to, you know, for these sessions. And
I just want
he
to
was
just stop
really,
you there for a second. I mean, Malcolm, I think maybe more now they have maybe the right impression of him, but maybe in the past they always thought he was this kind of, you know, this stern figure who, you know, you always had to, you know, he always expected you to follow the rules. But there, that in case in point, I mean, he's having fun with you, isn't he? A
100%.
lot of fun. I would imagine you would have had a lot of fun if you knew what his sense of humor was all about.
Yeah, no, he had an incredible sense of humor. You obviously needed to know him to understand the humor. I have a great story, and this is a great
Bring
case
it.
in point. If you know the layout of Pontefract or not, he used to stand on his balcony and he'd look down at the courts. And again, this is when I was kind of going in there as a young cheeky chap from across, you know, a few towns over, and myself and a guy called Eddie Charlton were on there doing drop and drive, and he was up at the top, and we the ball was so shiny, and I'll never forget it. I was in the back dropping the ball, and Eddie was in the front driving it. So every time he drove the ball from the front, this ball would just skid along the floor. And I just purely couldn't get it. Like I had to pick it up and just like chip it back in, pick it up, chip it back in. But I didn't want to complain about the ball, right? I'm training under Malcolm Woolstrop here. I didn't want to, you know, say boo to a goose. And he kept shouting, "Stop picking up the ball. Stop, stop it, stop it." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, no problem." So I'm like, I'm basically trying to shovel this thing to the front of the wall. And Eddie, like, he's looking in the corner of his eye. He knows, like, you know, something's happening. Anyway, all of a sudden you just hear like Malcolm coming down the stairs. I'm like, "Oh God, here we go. What's going to go on here?" So he comes on the court and he's like, "Why do you keep picking it up? Why?" And I said, "Well, I was holding the ball at this point." I said, "I'm really, really sorry, Malcolm, but this ball's so shiny that you can see your teeth in it." And he had the biggest wry smile on his face that I was that cheeky to say that. And he just picked out a new ball out of his pocket and passed it to us.
Okay, yeah.
And
So do you appreciate?
I'm pretty sure from that day on, he called me Luke.
Okay, he appreciated your candor and your sense of humor.
He
trusted you there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he did, and yeah, I mean, I had a great relationship. He was so kind to me to get me in the sessions from a young age with, because at the end of the day, there was not many players that my age. I was playing with a lot of older kids because a lot of the players from my age were still in sixth form or college or whatever it may be. But he was so good to me and allowed me to join the session. I had a great group of friends there, like Neil Cordell, Adam Taylor, you know, Eddie Charlton, Lewis Walters. We had an amazing group that was also training with James Woolstrop, Lee Beechel, and there was, I think it was about Mark Krychek at the time. Like there's so many people there that we became a really great unit of friends, and I definitely had some really fond memories there. And then, you know, other coaches like Paul Hornsby, he really developed my game as well to a really high level. He was the one that made me think about the creativity side of the game. And when it came to like, I was playing tournaments and stuff, and I was late to the game. So I was, you know, I was athletic and I was running around like a headless chicken. And I wasn't really doing much with the ball. And he would be the one that would, you know, teach me more about the game and how to create opportunities and stuff like that. And he was an excellent coach for me and a great guy too, who again, the personality of the coaches that I was around, like Andy Leroy, you couldn't find a funnier guy as well as a loyal and hardworking guy than Malcolm Woolstrop, with his sense of humor, his knowledge, his disciplinarian style. And then again with Paul, his personality and just being fun to be around, like whether you're doing a really hard session or just, you know, talking nonsense in the pro shop while stringing rackets, listening to music. Like it was just a good energy to be around. And that's what I kind of grew up with. And that's why I really just started to love the game more and more, because of the people that I was around, really.
And that's sort of, I did obviously that impacted the way you approach your the way you coach the young kids. You want them to have that same or similar experience that you had.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I sometimes I do reflect on where I'm at, and you know, sometimes I'm doing podcasts, or I've had chats with people about it. It's like, for me, I was never going to be world number one at squash, as much as I desired to be that. But I really do want to be the best coach that I can possibly be. And to do that, it's picking the best bits of everyone. I know what we talked prior to just, you know, to jumping on live about like coaches like Rob Owen, Rod Martin, the coaches that I've mentioned, all these stuff. And I love to just listen and sit and watch them coach and talk to them, get advice, pick what I think would be great from their style of coaching that I could add to mine. And I also add my own pieces to it. Like I've spoke to a lot of the Egyptian coaches and friends that I've made and kind of seeing their different styles. And I think that squash can be played in so many different ways. It can be played similarly, but not the exact same. And I feel like the more that I can add to my coaching philosophies and styles and the ability to adapt to different players and personalities and stuff, I think it comes from, you know, the knowledge of all these coaches that I've come across and that I've become friendly with or, you know, professional with. It's been a great journey.
Yeah, speaking of, I mean, you brought up the Egyptian squash, and obviously, we don't need to. It's pretty obvious what they're doing over there has been amazing over the past 20 years or so. That could, you know, it's partly to do or a lot to do with coaching. Do you see anything that they do that's a bit different, or something that has resulted in the production of all these great players?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've talked about, I mean, the things that I've picked up on is that it's not so much technical stuff that they're and like really focused on. It's more, you know, what are you doing with the ball? When are you doing certain stuff with the ball? What's your intensity like? There's, you know, I feel like if you looked at like the average player in each country, you look at the UK style, all the kids kind of look a certain way with a good technique and good foundations, and they hit good targets, and it's very much rhythm based. You look at the Egyptians and it might be a little bit frantic, but you know, the desire and the passion to get the ball back and to hit winners and go take the ball short and be, you know, a little bit more fearless, you know, but the technique might not look as fine-tuned. You know, you've got to think about what their first focus is, and that's, you know, how to play the game and what to do with the ball when. And I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. And then I always think about the US, and I know you've probably done the research on the British Junior Open and how the US each year on year are kind of creeping up that ladder. I mean, I'm pretty sure that in the last couple of BJOs, they've come second on the how far the players have come with whether it's getting to the finals, winning some age groups, or getting further and further into the quarters and latter stage of the tournament. And I feel like the US now is getting almost like a perfect balance of all these cultures. Because in the US now, you've got English coaches, you've got American coaches, you've got Canadian, you've got South American, you've got Egyptian, you've got all these coaches coming from different places. And a lot of them are in the clubs together, right? So I've had Egyptian coaches working with in my program. I've had a Mexican coaches, Colombian coaches, English coaches. So like all the ideas that are getting bounced around in all these different clubs is getting passed on to these players. So they're not one dimensional, and they're learning the game more from different voices and different cultures and different styles. And that the level is just year by year, just kind of increasing. And now, you know, I mean, we're going to dive into it again in a little bit, but we're now starting to see people make breakthroughs on the tour. And I think that's what, I mean, on the women's side right now, you know, it's amazing. We've got amazing role models. You've got Amanda Sobey, who's, you know, tough as nails, doing some amazing stuff. You've got Olivia Victor or Weaver. who's right up there, Will number 6'7". It's like for these young girls, it's so amazing to look up to and know that that could be them one day.
Yeah.
And you know, on the boys' side, like looking at Timmy Brownell, you know, that he in college and junior squash, you know, I mean, I don't know if he was like the world beater on the team. I think he was like number 5 or 6 on his Harvard team. And again, it was a very strong team, don't get me wrong, but you know, you'd think, oh, surely he was the number one, right? Because of the way
Yeah.
he's playing now, he's playing amazing squash. But I think he's showing the next generation that it's possible to, you know, no matter where you're at, if you give the time and energy and passion to the game and the dedication that he's put in on and off the court, you know, these great things can happen.
Yeah, I was thinking as well when you mentioned all the different coaches from around the world. And I could be wrong here, but is there something to the fact that you've also got player like junior players who are going to maybe private schools in the U.S. from all around the world, and you've got players from around the world playing college squash these days? That's obviously, I mean, what they bring with them when they come as well. Does that do you feel that that has an impact? As well.
Yeah, I mean, look, college squash has grown so much in the time that I've been in the US. Now, I mean, I've now got more involved in the college squash because quite a lot of the players that I've brought through the system as such are now playing college squash. And even to this year, two of the boys that I've taught since they're 8 years old play for Penn with Gilly, Nick
Yes.
Spazieri and Dana Santry, and they won the national championships. And I've kind of followed their journey. And you know, the brotherhood on those teams and sisterhood on the women's side, you see how together they are. And on that team, you've got kids from all over the world who are, you know, fighting for the same goal in a team environment for an individual spot, which is pretty cool. And again, it's getting our juniors in the US so engaged in the sport that, and they know it's they want to be on those teams, and they're just striving to be better and better all the time. So international exposure at the college level is really amazing. I think that US are doing a good job of trying to, you know, reach out and travel to these tournaments like the British Junior Open. Obviously, they're playing the World Junior Championships, stuff like that. There's, you know, the European events are as they are what they are. I think the US are trying to try out the Egyptian Junior Open this year. You know, I think any international exposure is
That'll be
good.
exciting.
I
I
think it
mean,
would be.
I think I had Kareem Darwish on a while ago, and he was talking about you just DM'd me there, by the
I know, so
way.
yeah.
No, he was saying, "Oh, I've got a junior tournament going on now," and it was a week-long tournament with like 900, I think he said 900 juniors. That's
Yeah.
insane. Like, have you ever
Yeah.
heard any of that?
No, I mean,
And they're all
so
good, you know.
high schools, I'm heavily involved in high school squash here in the US because I actually am the coach of an all girls team called Greenwich Academy. And the junior high school national championships has like, you know, 1500 or 1600 players in it. Obviously, that's not an individual event, but it's such a massive tournament. I can't imagine like an individual junior tournament with like 300 players in a draw. I'm not entirely sure like how the infrastructure would work on that and what the level would be like. But it just shows you like how many players are playing in Egypt and again like that. I think they don't even do a back draw. I think they something like that. If you lose, you're out, and it's almost like it's PSA from under 11. And you know, again, like it says a lot, doesn't it?
That's another element of it, isn't it? Isn't it? It's
Yeah.
just so competitive there. I'm here in the UAE. There was this one girl and her family. They just moved to the club that I play at. She, I don't know, 10 years old or whatever. And she said, "Oh," the mother said, "Oh, she plays a little bit. She played a little bit back in Egypt. Man, she was like, she could. She's going to be a pro. Like she looked that good." I mean, and she was sort of middling, level for her age back at her club in Egypt. Just a little thing, but man, she was doing solo practice, and it was great to watch.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you get a chance to ever go to the British Junior Open and see these kids, it's unbelievable. Year on year, I just love going because I'm looking at these under 11s and thinking, who's the next one? Who's the next Asal on that boys' side? Who's the next, Shabini on the girls' side? Like, there's some of the talent is really cool.
Yeah. Now, let's take a deeper dive into you and your coaching philosophy. So you kind of laid it out already, a little bit, but what is your, I guess, your overarching coaching philosophy? Because I know a lot of we know the success that you've had with juniors in the US. So obviously you're doing something right. And you kind of brought this to light a little bit with your the stuff that you did on squash skills recently. So
I think I have like certain fundamentals, like I said, with the passion for the game. I every player that I work with, whether they're established or whether they're just starting the game, I really try to instill some passion in the game and knowledge of the game, because squash, as we all know, is a super hard sport. To play squash competitively at a high level, you have to be extremely fit. You have to be very durable. You have to have the desire to be tough. But to do that, you've got to love it. Because if you don't, those extra hard sessions, you're not going to push to the intensity that it needs to be successful. So I think finding, building the passion for the game, whether it's through fun experiences to start with in the atmosphere that you provide within the program or within the sessions that you do. Expanding that knowledge to, whether it's squash TV or, finding players to follow, research, all the rest of it. I like to do like fun stuff for the kids where I'll be like, right, someone go watch a match and come back with a shot combination. Like, I'll say like, okay, well, I want someone to show me, like, find me a little clip of, someone hitting a really tight drive and playing a nice volley burst or whatever it may be, and they'll come back and they'll show me. And I always joke around saying, like, these players hit it tight, but they don't hit the ball Luke tight, right? It's a bit different. And
Luke
you know,
type.
my my
Okay.
yeah, my drop shots are softer than soft, and just making it fun and talking as though I'm the world's best squash player, and I'm clearly not, but they feel the energy from that, hopefully. But the way that I like to actually teach the game is a lot around variation and creativity, because I feel like there's certain ways that you can play the game, right? You could be, very, very difficult to beat from a fitness standpoint, not making errors and finding the back two corners. But I just love the creative side of the game and exciting parts, whether it's, containing with the view to attack. I like combinations. I like to be able to find spaces and different rhythms. I was talking to someone the other day, like, I like to think of squash sometimes like a song about the beats. Sometimes it's like a slower beat and you're riding the wave of pressures. But then sometimes when you're wanting to ramp it up and you're feeling good and confident, you might be upping the paces and hitting different angles and things like that. So like from that creative variation style, that's kind of the way that I like to play the game, because I like it to, again, be from that passion side and loving the game. And then like to actually enjoy playing it and watching it. Like, I actually enjoy watching my players play good squash and fun and creating opportunities and doing stuff, because it's a rewarding job, is coaching, right? When you reap the rewards and see it in front of you. But then also, like, and a philosophy of mine is like accountability and ownership. A coach can tell you a million things, but ultimately, it's on you, to the player, to take it on board, to try it, and then to put it into action, right?
That's got to be very, I mean, that's easy to do when you're talking to an adult, right? Adult. But as a junior player, to be able to get it through to them that, you're accountable for doing this, or you're accountable for, preparing yourself a certain way. That's got to be, that's a skill set to be able to teach that. How do you manage that?
It's a very difficult skill, but it's again, it's building the trust that you're trying to deliver something that is going to help them. I always say to some of the kids, let's say I'm working on a technical issue with a kid, maybe it's like, I don't know, a broken wrist on the backhand or whatever it may be. I always start by saying, we're not going to be friends for a while, and I hope you're okay with that. Because it's frustrating, right? The kids, they want instant gratification. They want that satisfying feeling straight away. Whereas something like a technical issue, it might take weeks or months to fix. So I always kind of say to them, like, you're not going to be my friend for a while. You might not like me for a while, and I'll be tough on you, but hopefully by the end of it we'll have a nice relationship and we'll be friends again. And it's funny to see some of the kids like, oh, now I see it, now I agree, or whatever it may be. But it's allowing them to understand that, with squash you don't really get that instant satisfaction, that you don't really get that instant result. Yes, you might have one big win, but did you back it up? Like the success model is more like in the distance versus like right in front of your nose. And it's about the journey that these kids are on. And even with the pros, right, to win at a pro level these days is so tough. Right, the level and the depth in squash is amazing.
Look at a guy like Ali Abu Alainen. I mean, he's just, I mean, look at what he's done in Guna this week. He's been so close for two years now, but
Exactly.
he's so good. He's just got so much talent.
And he's someone that I followed through college squash, right? Because he was at Penn, where the players that I worked with had gone, and Gilly's one of my best friends, as well as a great professional coach of colleague. So I've watched Ali Abu come through the system over here with that, and then I've also seen him like be so close yet so far in some of these matches. So to see him get over the line, it shows you like it's a journey. It's not you're not just going to get that one big win on tomorrow and then that's it. Now you're going to keep winning. It's so difficult. And with the ownership piece, it's like you have to understand the journey of squash is sometimes not fruitful. It's sometimes you feel like you don't know that you don't even know how to play. Like even one of my players, Caroline Fouts, the other week, she came away from a tournament. She's like, I felt like I played great. I said, well, let's watch the match, because I had an opposite opinion. And we sat down, and she's like, oh, you're making me feel like I don't know how to play squash. And I said, well, I just feel like maybe you could try something that might open new opportunities, new doors for you, but you've got to see it for yourself. So like, this is my opinion. Maybe watch it back and try and take out what you've felt before. And then, it might took a few days, but then but when she comes out of it and she said, yeah, I agree. And then the next tournament she's trying it. And then for this past weekend, she qualified for the World Championships in one of the qualification events by playing a newer style of play that she's trying to develop. And then it's like, yes, you are right. It worked, and I felt really much more confident and blah blah. And again, that's the ownership piece. It's like anyone who's telling you're not doing something right, personally, you're gonna be like, oh, really? Like I'm not. Whereas if it's coming from that right place and from someone that you built trust with, then you take it then on board yourself, but then it's on you to make the change as a player to take yourself forward. And that's why that final piece of accountability is so important as part of the way that I try to teach, really.
I can. I've told this story before on the podcast, but when I was a junior, one of my coaches back in the day, she told me, we're going to, I played in the men's A when I was 16, 15, or whatever. She said, your footwork, we need to really work on your footwork. I want you to change a few things. We're going to move back to men's C. We're going to get you into men's C and we're going to work on your footwork. And I refused. And to this day, I mean, my footwork was, it's probably the weakest part of my game. I get to balls and I'm pretty handy, but it's still, one of my as least is one of my worst the worst parts of my game. So at the end of the day, I think if somehow you have that ability to get through to kids at that age, to get them to to be accountable and to take on new initiatives and not worry about maybe instant gratification, as you were mentioning earlier. That's got to be tricky, though.
It is tricky, but it also sometimes comes down to the simple messages. You get out what you put in, right? I think again, we all know how hard squash is. I always say, if Luke was to play against Luke, the same old Luke, who would win? It'd be close. No one would know who would win. So how does Luke beat the same Luke? He needs to find another level. So you've always got to find ways to add to your game. Whereas now Luke, that's got a volley drop shot, but this one doesn't. Maybe that's the difference. And then we add, and you're building your all your foundations to create a better version of you. But if you keep doing what you've always done, as the saying goes, you'll get what you've always got. And again, it all boils down to accountability, ownership. What do you desire? Do you want to improve? What are your goals? Well, if that's your goals, you're gonna have to work for it, right? There's a journey that's involved here. And again, some of the goals that you sit down with the kids, they're like, okay, well, what's your goal? Oh, well, I want to be number one. Okay, all right. Well, right now you're the number 50. So there's a long way to go to be the number one. Like, what process are you gonna take? What how long is it gonna take? Whereas it's like, well, how long should it take? Should it take a few months? I'm like, no, this is like a year, right? This is a long time. This could might take a few years. It depends how old you are. And again, it's just like setting realistic expectations, and again, take not looking too far ahead, not looking too near. But again, the process is important.
I talked to Kemar Zaman. You must know the name, legend of the game, and he's absolutely hilarious. But he said to me, like, I think he still does quite a bit of work with the juniors, and I think his son, or not his son, sorry, his grandson, or nephew or whatever, is Noor Zaman. He might be one of the best juniors in the world. But he was saying how the Pakistani junior program, pretty much, he summed it up by saying, we're champion, not champions of squash, champions of net. So how do you overcome those issues where you get instant gratification? That I think that comes a lot from just the way of the world nowadays. You get whatever you want within it's on your phone, basically, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
As a coach, how far do you go in terms of dealing with that situation?
Well, I mean, again, we've like social media and all that stuff. It's like you want a lot of kids, they maybe looking at the outside world and the social media world as something that they want to be involved in, or they want to be shined upon. But I feel like squash is again a very humbling sport, which is also a good reminder for juniors, is that yeah, you might feel like you're doing really good, but there's always someone that's better with squash. And I think that it's one of those things where if you feel like you're doing well and then you don't do the work, then all of a sudden it comes to bite you. And again, it always there's always the opportunity to level up in squash, so it's finding ways to constantly develop. But in terms of like the world these days, you can use things positively, right? I generally, whether it's things like squash skills, I've done a few kind of series with squash skills. Jeff Rowe's a great friend of mine from back in the day, and the kids like to use that. It's an easy tool. If you're struggling, you've got amazing network of coaches to listen to and learn from. And again, everything that I might say to a junior might not work, but if they hear it from a different coach in a similar but different way, then if that's successful, that's successful. But yeah, the
Squash
stuff like
skills too,
that.
just to, I mean, to go there. I mean, as a coach, like you were saying earlier, you could say, okay, find a clip of a match or a player where they're playing sequences of shots. Well, all they have to do is go to squash skills and just type it in the AI thing they have now. They're going to find things pretty quickly, and it's inspiring, the stuff that they have on there right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try and stay away from the AI as much as I can, just to keep my brain as healthy as possible.
Yeah.
I wish I could have used it for my GCSEs or something when I was back in school in the UK.
There you go.
But
Yeah.
no, I mean, the way that the world is going, there's all everything's kind of online and stuff like that. But the beauty of our sport is that it's a healthy way to, to live our sporting life, and that's something that's key too.
Yeah, 100%. So just in terms of your, we got away a little bit from your squash journey. Now you did mention that you have an affinity with South America, and maybe not a lot of people know this, but you were national team head coach for Paraguay. I think it was in 2011, and you managed with that team at that time. They earned their first ever Pan Am Games medal in squash. Or was it there? Yeah. So, give us a little backstory how that all came about, and what that experience, getting that first medal for Paraguay was like.
Definitely a true highlight of my entire life. The journey that I went on there. So that I was at the time I was working in Greenwich at a country club, and I was on like an 8 month, 9 month contract. So like basically through May through August, or May, June, July, August, I was like free to travel and do whatever I pleased. So I actually played some PSAs, and they just happened to be in South America during that time. So like in like May, I would go down to Brazil and Argentina, Paraguay, Colombia, Peru. Like I tried to play as many of the tournaments as possible. Not so much personally to be like the best player possible, because during that other 9 months or 8 months of the year, I was working full time as a coach, so there wasn't much time to train. I did try and keep up with it as much, but it was more just like fulfill my passion of traveling the world, meeting people, playing squash, and trying to be successful and being hungry, but more so learning more and more about the game of squash. I've watched some amazing matches when I've been at these tournaments, and like I saw Diego Elias win his first ever PSA in Argentina, right? And look at him now. Like I've seen so many amazing things at these events. But when I was down there playing the tournaments, I was in Brazil, in Goiânia, Brazil, an amazing place. And I played a guy from Paraguay called Esteban Casarino, who has become one of my closest friends. And we just were talking about squash after we played. I'm pretty sure he beat me. And we were sat outside the court after in this shopping center outside the glass court. And we were just sat talking squash. And I think he was relatively intrigued that I was a little bit different. I was 20 at the time, or 21 at the time. And I wasn't in it to be a professional squash player and year round, this is my whole thing. I was talking more about where I wanted to be and how I wanted to, push forward with my coaching career and pass on, my knowledge or passion for the game to kids and stuff like that in the US. And I had desires to be the best coach that I could possibly be. And from that conversation, it was probably, I mean, we went on to a few more tournaments, so we built our friendship, and again, like whether it was talking squash or not squash, we became very close. And when I came back to the US, he called me and said that the Olympic Committee of Paraguay want to hire a squash coach for the Pan Am Games that year. So I spoke to my current employer and just said, look, is it okay if I head down to Paraguay for the next, 6 to 9 months and be down there to develop to help the team, prepare for the Pan American Games? The Pan American Games is once every 4 years. It's a major event for squash, as is the Commonwealth Games. Like it's a kind of a parallel. It was a huge opportunity, and when I got the go ahead to go down, I headed down there. And for those that don't know, Paraguay, it's a third world country. It's super hot. It's amazing, amazing country. I've never felt so welcomed by people, in my life. I met some amazing players that were, I built like kind of the community at the club a little bit and tried to get some juniors involved. But the main focus was how to win a medal at the Pan American Games, considering that the team wasn't very strong, right? We had Esteban Caserino at the time was about 36 or 35 years old. André Leroux was also 35, 36 years old. And then we had a 16-year-old, as in Nico Caballero, on the team. And from those guys, we had to form a doubles team because our main goal that I focused on was that we could win a medal in doubles. And as you may or not have watched doubles squash, but if you haven't, you can do your research on South American countries and doubles. They are very, very tough to beat. They're very, very passionate about it. There's blood, sweat, and tears and more that goes into it. And so I did a lot of research. I spoke to Nick Matthew about the tactics that he's used when he's won these gold medals with Adrian Grant in the Commonwealth Games. I spoke to Martin Knight and Campbell Grayson, who competed in the Commonwealth Games for New Zealand. Like, I utilized all my resources to do as much research as possible. And then, I kind of passed that on to my players because we used to train in Argentina because there was a doubles court there. And then when we were there, I'd do all the stats, I'd put them against different players and different partnerships. And it just so happened that I ended up choosing Esteban and Nico, the 16-year-old, versus having the two old heads. And the reason was it came down to like almost like an error versus winner ratio. And Nico on the backhand side as a 16-year-old with all that pressure on him, he just never made errors. He just kept it going. And anything that Esteban would say to him, and Esteban was kind of the guy who brought him through, he would just like listen, and be so dialed in. He would not say boo to a goose on there. He would be like, "I'll do anything you say." And the partnership was so like unique. And the connection that they both had was fantastic. And then when we actually got to the games, we got a stroke of luck as such in the first round. I mean, I feel like we would have won anyway, but we was up first round against Diego Elias and Andres Duani from Peru. But Diego Elias forgot his glasses or
Okay.
couldn't find his squash glasses. So they had
Oh,
like
he was a
5 minutes
junior
to
then. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
find their squash goggles. No one would obviously lend them out, right? From other countries. We weren't going to lend them a pair. And they came back with like sunglasses or something like that. And the match was, awarded to us, which put
Wow.
us through to the medal winning match against Colombia. And it was an amazing match. I'm pretty sure it was close to 2 hours long. But it was a true that just knowing the community that I met, like there was a guy, Marcus Weisenbrut, who was the president of Paraguay Squash at the time. He was so passionate about the program of Paraguay. It was the Olympic Committee and the support that they gave to even get me to come, a 21-year-old guy or 22-year-old guy at the time, to come and be the coach of this team in such a major event. There was just so much like passion and energy and kind of commitment to it. And it got to one all, 10 all deciding point.
Yeah.
And I think there was a few lets, like it was so intense. And when we won it, it was a true like Olympic moment. Like everybody with the Paraguay flag on their back was in absolute tears. I was in tears. The players were in tears. And it was like a full-on embrace on the court. We'd won this medal, the first medal, not just squash, but that Paraguay had won in 24 years in any of these major events. So it was like all
Wow.
over the nation's news. It was a huge deal. Like ESPN was there covering it. And yeah, it was just awesome. I remember walking off the court. We were all like kind of just like, we just embraced. We'd all calmed down a little bit. And we're like walking off the court. And there were the Canadian girls team. I think it was Sam Cornett and Stephanie Edmondson. They were like waiting to get on court for their match. And they were like almost in tears. They were
Oh,
like,
wow.
that's an Olympic moment. Like it was amazing. And yeah, it was something that I'll definitely never ever forget in my entire life. And you know, from there, Paraguay have now built some new, you know, a brand new national center. Like there's more squash there now, and we've got a few juniors coming through, and it's really cool to see. And yeah, just the people in South America that I've met, the players that are playing on the tour now. Like I've got so many friends and that I follow and keep in touch with, whether it's from Argentina and Paraguay, Brazil, Colombia, all these places. It's just so such an amazing community of squash, and it's so nice to like see like Diego Elias like doing so well. You know, you look at Leandro Ramiglio, who's doing amazing, Miguel Angel from Colombia, and there's all these players now coming through as well. That it's just exciting for that you know, part of the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's and they're such great personalities on tour, aren't they? I mean, the South
Yeah, I mean,
Americans, they bring a different outlook. Just, not, squash is squash, but the way they play and they're.
yeah. This was 2011 when I went down as the Paraguay national coach, and since then I've obviously tried my best to work my way up the US ladder. And last year I was fortunate enough to be selected to do the Pan Am Games in Santiago for Team USA. So 12 years on after the medal winning performance with Paraguay, I was now heading down to Santiago with the big hitters US, and it was I've never been more proud to be involved with that. But I think what in the lead up to the event, I said to the players, like, when it comes to the doubles, it doesn't matter what level you are, whether you're the world number one and world number two, when you come up against these South Americans, they really do play with that extra flavor, right? It's they're on their do or die. Like they're not going to let that ball bounce twice. They're going to find different ways to beat you. They're going to do anything they can to play and win. And there's some amazing results, right? I mean, I won't go into too much details, but there were some upsets in the tournament, and it just shows that in squash in general, for the for whether it's the PSA Tour, the Pan American Games, Olympic future Olympic Games, if you play with your heart as well as your skill, you know, anything can happen. And I feel like if there's any part of the world that does it best, I really do think it's a South American kind of culture that they play with. It's that little added spice.
Is that some
As
that's something you took away from your Paraguay experience and probably implemented into your own I guess your coaching tapestry, huh?
absolutely, yeah. I mean, look, every experience that I've had and every person that player, coach, supporter of the game of squash, I've tried to take the best of anyone that I've come across. And take it forward. And, you know, whether it's been something from a technique base, from a tactical base, from just a general love for the game or support of the game, I've tried to take it forward with me. And I was so fortunate to be trusted in that position from such an early, a young age. And then for it to be that successful and win a medal and it be that historic, from there, it was a huge stepping stone for me to get to where I am today, because I've always strived to be in that position again. And one of my goals after coming away from that Pan American Games is I want to do the Pan American Games again one day. And just so be it, it was a 12-year journey to do it again,
Right
and it
on.
was truly amazing.
Well, I guess that also part it helped with your trajectory in terms of where you are as junior national team head coach, if I'm not mistaken, right? So from when you
Yes.
came back from Paraguay to where you are now, how did you end up in that role as junior team head coach?
So there was a guy called Rich Wade, who was the director of national teams at US, another fantastic Yorkshireman, who created the pyramid for not only the pyramid structure for the junior structure, but also for the coaching structure in the US. And it kind of the base of the pyramid was like your regional coaching. Then it was like your event coaching, whether it was the Battle of the Border where US would play Canada, the British Junior Open. There was some other little events. And then you go to your next stage, which is the HPP program, which is working with like the Pan American squads, the pros, and then obviously then you've got your national team stuff, like the world championships and all the rest of it. So I started out with that in I think like 2013, around that time, where I started out as the regional coach of Connecticut, and then I was invited then to do the British Junior Open, and I believe I've just finished my, this year was my 10th British Junior Open or 9th British Junior Open in a row. So yeah, just kind of working my way up that ladder and being invested in US squash as a whole, right? I think a lot of people when they come to the US, they kind of think that the journey of success is quite instant, but it's not. Those that are in the positions that they're doing really well with their programming, it's down to a lot of years of patience, hard work, dedication to programming, for not only for your own programming but for the collective. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about in the US is the US teams, US squash overtaking Egypt one day, right?
Well, it
And
almost happened there a
I
couple,
mean,
was it last year at the Worlds? Yeah.
you feel like you're on their shoulder, but there's still a long way to go. But I think the more that people are really passionate about taking US squash forward, the better. And I think Rich Way did an amazing job to create that structure, because the more that you integrate yourself from the ground up, knowing what it's like at regional level, knowing what it's like at like semi-national level, national level, international level, is so important for the growth of that. And I was fortunate enough to go to the World Junior Championships in 2019, I think it was. That was the first one. I went with Alex State, who was the head coach at the time, and we went to Malaysia. We had an amazing team, and that was a fantastic experience. And then the following year was going to be in the Gold Coast, where we felt well, we had an amazing team and a real shot, but then COVID cancelled it. Our men's team that year was really, really strong. We had Nick Spazzieri, Dana Santry, Thomas Rossini, I think Dylan Huang. Like, we had an amazing team lined up, and we were so excited not only to go to Australia for 3 weeks, but for the potential outcome of how well this team could do. But then, yeah, since COVID, Alex stepped down and I stepped into the head men's role. And I've done, I went to Nancy, France for the World Championships. I missed out on last year's World Championships because I had my first child. Well, my wife gave birth to our first child. But this year we're so excited again for the World Championships to be on home soil. And I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic when we get down to Texas this summer, and getting the guys ready. We only just ended the season in March, and we've had like I've had our first like a few initial calls with the players on the team and my fellow assistant coach, Simba, and kind of just getting the goals there that we're not just turning up this summer. We're going there to really shake a few trees. And kind of getting them on board with that is kind of exciting. It's very exciting to be a part of, for sure.
I think part of that trajectory, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the success you've had in Connecticut with your with the women's the school that you teach. Is it Greenwich
Greenwich Academy, yeah.
Greenwich Academy? Now, I'm not sure how many years in a row you guys have won that high school championship, but it's like
Yeah,
10,
so
11.
this year was our 8th year in a row of winning the title. So I came into the job 10 years ago, and in my first year we lost the title. They were on a I think like a 3 year or 4 year winning streak at that point. My first year we actually had like 8 or 9 championship balls to win it, and we ended up losing the final 4-3. Blame the coach, I say. But then since then we've been successful each year, and obviously we missed a year for COVID. But the school team is an all girls school. They're amazing athletes, all dedicated to squash. Some, I have my own program. It's called LB Squash, and I just rent the courts at the school as a side project. And the reason why I created that was that in the community, it wasn't really well known that boys could use the courts. That could be with it being an all-girls school because the courts are on campus.
They also have
So
a boys' team, right?
yeah, they do. It's called Brunswick, and that's like
Right,
the brother school, but it's not connected. They're actually separate schools. In the high school, they actually they have co-ed, some co-ed classes, but in the lower school and middle school, it's purely single sex education. But yeah, the program is a success of the community as well. The some of the players on the team, play with myself, and I coach them personally. But some of the players on the team work with different coaches in the area, and it's kind of bringing them together for that team aspect to show that the individual sport and how you can kind of get ready for your college experience. And the way that we run it is that we run it to be successful, and we want to keep the streak alive and all the rest of it. And I always check in with all the players on their training and the direction. And it's definitely a fun part of the year because my US squash and LB squash kind of coaching hats are on 365 days a year, whereas the Greenwich Academy piece, it only kind of comes in the winter. So like from like early November until like the end of February, end of March time. So like it kind of it's a nice time when it comes around because it's like you're very motivated for success, and there's like 40 girls in the high school program. So you've got some girls who are at the elite level, but you've also got some girls who just want to try out squash, which again, at this stage in my career, I'm not coming across many beginners. So when I do, it's quite refreshing because I enjoy like, okay, well, this is a fresh start. Let's get them, returning the serve and enjoying their experience again. And it's kind of that cycle again, which I've missed. So when it comes around in the winter, it's really nice and refreshing that I get to have the balance of working with my elite, almost professional athletes all the way down to my, brand new beginners. And it's a nice time of year.
Yeah, brilliant. The now the women that you're coaching now on the US the junior team, you've got some really talented girls. They've done well in you mentioned the British Junior Open and also in the Worlds. Caroline Fouts and Charlotte Pastel in particular, I believe. So you've been with them for quite a while now. So if you don't mind, for everybody out there, talk about their games and what you see going forward for them, how things sort of sh are shaping up for the world, for the worlds, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot to talk about with, especially Caroline. So I'll kind of touch on her second, but Charlotte Pastel she's young. She's just turned 17. It was like really, really awesome last season. I don't probably my most successful season as a coach last year, where at the Spectre Center in Philadelphia, the brand new US Squash Center, the national championships. On one of the glass courts, Charlotte was playing her final in the under 17s. And on the other glass court on the other side, at the exact same time, Caroline was playing the under 19 final. And they both won the national championships within like minutes of each other. And it was
Right.
kind of like they both came together and we all like embraced. It was an amazing feeling
Wow.
that they both won it at the same time. And it was amazing for the program, for each other, for the families. And it was a really like, amazing moment. And from there, like Charlotte has done a lot of work to really push herself forward. For her overall maturity, she's definitely got a lot long way to go in terms of like knowing the direction that she could take her game. I think she's going to be a fantastic college player. I would love for her to have the desire to turn pro. I just don't know whether that's on the map for her yet. I think when she goes to college squash and she's successful and she sees how she could, even raise her level, maybe she'll change
That
her view in
gives
the
the,
future.
college squash is so deep, isn't it? That gives them a chance to take it to, if they want, take it to that next level.
Yeah,
It's
absolutely. I mean, look. Year on year, the college squash level is getting higher. Charlotte's going to be heading to Princeton, which is amazing. They've had some amazing results, and quite a lot of our players that I've worked with have headed there and had an amazing experience. And they're building a new facility, so it's all very, very exciting for her. But yeah, no, she's on the World Junior team this summer. So she's going to be training really hard for that, and I'm excited for her to see. what she can do on these events, which,
What do you
she's
think she can do?
a, I mean, she had a rough time at the British Junior Open, and I think that she came into the event playing so well, right? She had some amazing results. She was the national champion. And then she played a really good girl first round. It's like almost like a shock. She was seeded to win, but she lost. But it was more to do with like she'd had a few international experiences, but not enough, if you know what I mean. So understanding the pressures and how to handle those, like I said, in terms of her like overall kind of playing maturity, it's not as vast as it is, maybe like some kid from England who maybe travels and plays league matches and stuff like that. It's not quite there yet. But I think from the British Open and that experience of feeling really hurt and didn't have the success that she desired, it's really spurred her on to really get some big wins. Like she had an unbelievable win at the national championships this year. She Basically, it was between her and another girl to qualify for the world junior team. And she was two love down. Her dream of getting the world junior team was over in her eyes. We found a way to, motivate her, let it all go. Let's go, one last shot, give it a good go. She got it back to two all. We're like, one more game, let's give it a good shot. She went down six love in the fifth. And I was like head in hands, couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, I'm getting ready to wipe the tears and put my arm around her. And then she won the next 11 points.
Wow.
Yeah, and qualified. It just showed what she's like. She's very, very tenacious. She never gives up, ever. She's the biggest and best sport as well. Like she'll always call with double bouncers. She's always checking if everybody's okay. She's super, super nice and bubbly. But her determination to get the ball back with her speed, with her energy is really, re really what sometimes sets her apart from the others. When that where she gets these wins is because she's very, very fast. She reads the game well enough that she can get the balls back. And I think once she kind of like again builds her identity more and becomes more comfortable with her identity, that's when her game is only going to develop. And I think by the time she does get to the Worlds this summer, she's going to be in great shape. She's going to be very tough to beat. And I think, it's up to her how she can kind of set the world alight as such.
That bodes well. And then Caroline, obviously, she's already made a name for herself on the world stage. I think even PSA wise, she's played a couple of events there, so and done well. So what are your
So Caroline and I started working together. I think she was about 12 or 13, something like that. And I remember the first initial conversations that I had with her parents, with Caroline, and I remember it vividly. I said, "I'm gonna tell you things that you don't want to hear, and whereas you may have being told stuff that you like hearing." And that was kind of through initial conversation, like the first few sessions I had with her. Like if I would say something that she didn't like, you could just tell her energy or her she felt maybe insecure about taking like constructive criticism or something like that. So I just told her, I said, "Look, this relationship is going to start by I'm going to tell you stuff that you might not like hearing. But in the end, it'll work out, and I think you've got huge upside potential. I think you could be one of the best players that US has had, and it's kind of not that it's coming to fruition right now, but the potential is coming to fruition. I think everybody's starting to say, oh, who's Caroline Fouts? And her hard work and dedication that she's put in, and she's had setbacks. She's had amazing wins. She's had battles. She's been down in the dumps. She's been on top of the mountains. But that journey has got to where she is now, where she joined an elite group of players. She won the under 19 championships this year for the third time in a row, and not many people have done that. A lot of people have heard of Marina Stefanoni. I actually worked with Marina when she was a junior as well. So I've been part of that journey, and for her to, emulate what she achieved and by winning 3 under 19 national championships is an incredible achievement. Looking at the British Open this year, the British Junior Open, she got to the final. For someone who also with Caroline, it's also battling the mental side of the game where she would look at the draw and maybe not believe she could do it in the past. She'd look at the draw and like, oh, how can I possibly beat that person? Whatever it may be. Whereas now, over the years of the support, the belief, the adding levels to her game, she's now feeling more and more confident in her identity that she does belong and that she can achieve and that she can, break down personal barriers and more. And it's shown in her results. Like, she had an amazing run at the British Junior Open, where she ended up losing in the final to Fairuz, which was a good match. I think if she had a few better choices here and there, it could have been a different story in that match, but Fairuz played fantastic. And then she followed that tournament up with an amazing tournament of champions. She was the wild card. She beat Melissa Alves, who was 20 in the world or 22 in the world at the
That was a
time.
huge one.
It was a massive, massive win. Again, a lot of self-belief, a lot of determination, a lot of hard work that paid off. She played an amazing match and learned so much against Tina Gillis in the following match. And then the journey there is she's been playing these PSA tournaments. She's been getting some wins, getting to the semis, getting to the quarters, beating higher ranked opponents. This past weekend, like I said, she qualified for the World Championships, and she played the World Championships last year, which she qualified for. So, she's building these experiences, which is ultimately going to bode well for her overall career. One of the things in the US that we've tried to do is always try to find ways to develop the criteria for the juniors to get better and better. And one of the ways that we changed was that you could qualify for the World Junior Team by PSA ranking. So it gave an avenue for Caroline to move away from the junior squash system here in the US and others like Ria Novani and a few others, but like gave her an avenue to really attack the pro scene and get out of that umbrella of going to these junior tournaments and winning, or maybe only having one or two matches where you lose it in a few months. Side note, here at the World Junior Championships in France a few years ago, I sat the boys down and we just watched the semi-final or quarter-final. I think it was like, oh no, it was the World Junior Final. It was Rowan Damming and Finlay Withington, I think it was. And after the match, I sat the boys down and I said, well, what do you think? Like I said, what an amazing win for Rowan Damming, blah, blah, blah. And I asked them a question. I said, how many matches do you think those guys have lost this year? And the answers were like three, four, five. I'm like, okay, how many matches? Let's go individually. How many matches have you guys lost? And I think like Rishi went first. He's like two. And bear in mind, this is in August, right? So like he'd lost one match in January at a JCT and then, maybe lost the national championship final or something, right? And they were shocked when I said, I would say Rowan Dammen, the world junior champion that you just watched win the world juniors, probably lost 30, 40 plus matches this year. And what does that tell you? It tells you that he's finding ways to level up. He's playing league matches against pros. He's playing against old, wiry characters, adults, and top players, and all these things where he's finding ways to raise his game. And that's where we had a problem in the US, where our kids weren't losing. They were playing each other, right? Whereas, as we all know, you learn the most generally. Well, if you lose and you don't learn, you've really lost. Whereas if you lose and you learn, then you haven't really lost. You're building. So it was finding ways for our players in the US to lose positively in a way to enhance development. And Caroline was, I would say, the first product of this new criteria and dimension because she was the one that was the first to move away from these playing in the junior tournaments. She played like, I think, I mean, I'd have to look at the record this year, but I would say she's played maybe six or seven, eight, maybe eight pro events versus playing six or seven, eight junior tournaments. I think she's played two junior tournaments this
She's going
year.
to dominate those ones.
Yeah, I mean, she won the national championship without dropping a game. She won the US Junior Open without dropping a game, and then she lost in the final of the British Open. But leading up to that, she didn't drop a game in the to get to the final, right? So, and Fairuz, who's played all these PSAs, you look at Amina Orphy, right? She's beating everyone on, that comes in front of her at this point, up until that point. She didn't end up playing the British Junior Open because she was playing in a 100K PSA. So it's like we needed to get our players there. And Caroline has really set the tone for the future of US squash by playing these tournaments. For her personally, I truly believe sky's the limit. I think Amanda Sobey and Olivia Fichter, Sabrina Sobey, Olivia Klein, they've really set the bar high for the next generation. Being ranked top 10 in the world, top five in the world, it's like such an amazing thing to strive for. Caroline has the physical attributes. She's very, very strong. She's very fit. She's very fast. Her game is developing all the time because she's playing these events. She's seeing different styles. She's understanding that, you need to play multiple different ways to win squash. You can't just play one way. The future is very, very exciting for her. She'll be. She's right now. She's got a few. She's going to be going to the World Championships next week or the week after in Cairo. Then she has a little bit of a break until the World Junior Championships. It'll be a training block. But then in the fall, she's going to head to Harvard to start her college career. Now, the U.S. system with these kids is. They're working their way to get into college. Luckily for Caroline, she's an amazing student as well as an athlete, and she's got herself into an amazing college. Unfortunately enough, they have an amazing coach in Mike Way, who has nurtured and developed, an amazing list of players. From the women's side, you're looking at, Marina is just graduating there. Amanda and Sabrina went there. I'm sure there's others that I'm not naming. And then look at the boys' side. You've got like Ali Farag, Victor Kroon, Timmy Brownell. And again, the list of names that would go on. But she's going to be stepping into an environment that is hopefully going to continue her success in a really positive way, where college squash is exciting. She has an amazing team and her teammates there and a coaching staff.
It's going to be hugely competitive too. I mean, you've got.
The framework there, like even down the strength to the strength and conditioning, and just the overall care for these, student athletes is amazing. So she's going to be playing and training like a pro alongside her academics. And hopefully if she's successful enough at the Worlds and the next few PSAs, then her ranking should be at a great level to sustain throughout college. Obviously she can't play every event like most players do, but if she can get her ranking into that 60 50 area, right now she's 62 I think, but if she can get like top 50 by college, then she can look at maybe sustaining that throughout college, and then hopefully doing what Agena Kennedy has done when she came out of college and just burst onto the scene. And that would be the ultimate, goal.
Yeah, brilliant. Now in terms of the guys, Rishi's correct me on the pronunciation of his last name, Srisa Staba. That could be is
Srivastava.
Rivastava, okay. Now he's done well. He won the U.S. Junior Open last year, and I think he had a decent run at the. I'm not sure if it was the World Juniors or the British Juniors, but the men are. It's a different story, isn't it?
Yeah,
Because you've got the
definitely.
women, the templates there. You've got the Amandas, Sabrina's, Olivia. They laid the groundwork, but the men, we've got a few guys there now. You guys have a few guys, Kimmy, Spencer, Shahjahan are doing reasonably well. What does it look like now in terms of the junior boys?
Yeah, I mean, look, Rishi, Rishi has been really successful as a junior. He's like you said, he won the US Junior Open, he's won some national championships. He had a really good run, not this year, I think it was the year before the British Junior Open. He had a lot of upset wins and stuff like that. I mean, he's had to clean up his game a little bit. He had a few issues with his, like, movements and temperaments, but off the court, Rishi's an amazing kid. I really enjoy his company. He's a fantastic kid to be around. And again, his game is it does have the ability to be successful internationally. The issue is exposing him to that international exposure more often. Now, again, if you, I actually had a call candidly with Rishi last week because he's part of my US squash team for this year's World Juniors, and I just mentioned to him, like, look, every time I've been in your corner, whether it's been the World Juniors, the British Open, whatever, like, you've had some amazing wins and you've done everything you can to possibly win. And then I look around and look at the people that you've beaten, and they're winning like 15, 20K PSAs and this, that, and the other. And you've not stepped into that scene, for whatever reason. I mean, the academic rigor that these guys go through in the US is so tough, right? That the time away from school is sometimes, something that they can't handle. But one of the goals that I've given him before World Juniors this year is to get out of this comfort zone and play some international competition, whether it's some satellite PSAs or whatever it may be, to find his level, to see where he's at. You can train as hard as you want, but if you go on court and you lose free love, then you need to be working on something to, get better or work harder.
Take the
So you always need to.
well-damning approach, right?
Yeah, just finding those barriers to be able to break down and all the rest of it.
That easy
But
enough for them to do? I mean, obviously there's been this sort of trend with the men, the US men. They get to a certain point and then it kind of drops off.
yeah, I mean, look, the women are, I mean, from the women I've worked with and that I see in the US that play sports, their athletic attributes and physicality is really, really good. So then whichever sport they go in, and I know that US is quite successful in like Olympic sports, right? Track and field or whatever it may be. The US athletic ability of women I really see is really, really strong. So putting them up against different countries, whether it's squash or whatever, we've got a good solid chance. And it just so happens that, yes, we've got had a generation of players, Amanda Sobey, Olivia Fichter, Olivia Klein, Sabrina Sobey, who are setting the tone and versus exciting all those young juniors, like now Caroline Fouts coming through. There's lots of younger girls who are also getting better and better all the time. But they've got that now to look forward to. So the success will hopefully be bred. Now, on the men's side, I feel like there's been players that have been lost in the system. So like they've not had the chance to do what Caroline's done this year and play the PSAs to qualify for World Juniors and find that different approach. They've not had, I mean, there's been players in the past, Julian Inglewood, Gilly Lane, even Todd Harrett, he's coming towards the end of his career, but he went to college and he's pushed through. But now we do have Timmy and Spencer and all these guys, Andrew Douglas, who's given it a shot, and Dylan Huang's now come out of college. I mean, some of the, I mean, I'm pretty biased because Nicholas Baziri is a kid that I've taught since he was 8 years old, but he's decided now he wants to give pro go, and he's a very
Okay.
exciting talent. And that's, and
He
again,
was
that's
at
a,
Penn, right?
he's at Penn, and that's my biased opinion because, he's almost like a member of my family, but someone like him to be inspired by, what Timmy and Spencer are doing and really giving it a go and leaving college to pursue that dream is really exciting. It's a game changer because someone like Nick could go into an amazing job in the financial industry and do very, very well for himself as soon as he finishes college. But now someone like him is changing the landscape, hopefully, for the future of US squash to be like, this could be a real career. It's so exciting to travel the world playing the sport that you've worked so hard for and that you actually love deep down. So I think that it's only a matter of time before we start seeing some of these Americans build the rankings. And I mean, Timmy's doing amazing stuff right now. And I really, think I hope that he continues to get these scalps. I know that Spencer just won the qualifier to play the World Championships this in the next couple of weeks. So again, all these things are pointing in the right direction. It's just having those breakthroughs, trying to find a way to develop our juniors internationally, Rishi being the example, right? Once a year, he'll play the British Open and beat all these amazing players. But then all those amazing players are playing PSAs, 12 PSAs a year, and he's playing zero. It's finding the ways to make, especially the boys' side. I feel like the girls is well structured. We've got the bar set by the top players. There's so many girls coming through. The athletic ability of the girls is fantastic. The knowledge of the game and the way that we're playing it in the US now is getting better and better. I just feel that once we've got that on the men's side and we can implement the international exposure more often, in the junior level, to pros, like for the juniors playing pro events, then all of a sudden we're going to start seeing some breakthroughs. Because you come to a junior tournament in the US and you look at some of these players, they're amazing players. Like some of the styles that you're seeing, like Jack El Riani, he's a 16-year-old kid who could have be very close to playing on the world junior team this year. Fantastic player. I mean, his mom and dad were both squash players, which
I
helps,
was going to
but
ask you about that later, but
he play he plays with his heart on his sleeve as well as all the skill. And I love watching him play. But like there's I could name a bunch of kids. Aidan Chang, last a couple of British Junior Opens ago, I asked him, he played the 3-4 seed from Egypt, and I think Aidan was unseeded. I basically told him, like, can you keep the ball, tighter than tight to the wall for half an hour? This kid will get frustrated. That ball did not leave the wall for half an hour, and he beat this kid free love, right? And so, like, and then he went on, I think got to the semi-final, ended up losing to Marwan Assal. And again, this kid's an unknown, never played an international tournament. But there's so many players like that, that if we can uncrack the mold as such, then there is talent there. We've just got to keep exposing it and getting it better and better and better. I don't think it's like, oh, well, the level isn't good enough in the US on the men's side. It is. It really is. It's just finding the breakthroughs, and hopefully, Timmy, like I said, keeps going. Spencer keeps going. Hopefully, Dylan Huang and Andrew Douglas keep going. Spaziri, who's a fun guy to watch for these kids who are these juniors who like watching the squash, watching the college squash. Nick plays a fun, attractive game. Hopefully, he moves forward and inspires the kids to say, "Oh, I want to do that one day." And I just think it's only a matter of time from the men's side too.
Well, Timmy and Spencer, I think they've got together this National Pro League. Now, is that
Yes.
something? And I've several years ago, I sort of asked a few Martin Heath and guys like that, why isn't there a National Pro League in the U.S. similar to what they have around Europe? And it's just logistics. They used to always say it's difficult to manage, but Timmy and Spencer seem to have got something going here. That would be something really exciting for the juniors, these top juniors to take part in, especially if you've got players from around the world, best players in the world, who should be playing in this league if the league is sort of scheduled in such a way that it around the big events that the PSA Tour has.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've done an amazing job to get this off the ground. It's been in the works for a long time. There's been lots of conversations about it, the structure, the style, whatever it may be. And I think they've brought an amazing product to fruition. I think this year, I think it actually starts in a couple of weeks, is the first season. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't know if you saw, but it was like a very, very like American style draft where they would, draft pick the players, and it
Disc
was like,
golf.
it's cool. And look, American culture, American sports, and that whole thing, they absolutely eat that up, right? So, they've done an amazing job, and I really hope that this first season is successful, and I'm sure it will be. They've marketed it really well. The PSA players have got behind it, right? A lot of the top players are on the teams, like Victor, Youssef Ibrahim's on a team. Like, there's a lots of other players that I'm missing out. There's also like some exciting players. I don't know if you've seen the trick shots from Mathias Knudsen, but I mean, I would like to watch him play. Like, again, it's like I forget the exact format, but it's like there's like a shootout rounds. I mean, watching that guy, what he can do with a racket, if he's shooting left, right, and center in a shootout round, it's exciting, like a development for the game in a different way versus watching just the best of five, right? It's a cool thing, and I really hope it's successful, and I really hope that it pushes forward and more teams from around the country get involved, like for the future. I think it could be an amazing thing for the sport.
Yeah, definitely bodes well, and just I guess it goes part and parcel with the development of U.S. squash the way it's been going. This just sort of, makes sense right now. It's just going to help grow the game even more in the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah, no, I really do believe that. And you know what? Like, if you look at the list of teams and where they're actually situated to, I actually don't think there's a team in Connecticut, or there's a team in New York, which is again, that's amazing. But it's like Atlanta, Louisville, Chicago. Like, again, it's in places where yes,
Dallas.
there's a squash community, but it's not like a thriving squash community, which is awesome because again, it's going to build excitement about the sport in places that is not, like it's not Greenwich, Connecticut, where this thing is. Where, like I said, right, if I was to drive from my house right now, I could hit 20 different clubs within 25 minutes, right? Whereas and this is the exciting thing about these places like Atlanta. It's got a great squash community. Not many places to play a great squash community, but like it's gonna have some singular excitement about this is their team for the entire community. And I think that's pretty cool.
That's brilliant. Yeah, bodes well, 100%. Well, Luke, you've been tremendous with your time here today. Is the little one, is she or he?
Yeah, little Alfie.
Little
He's
Alfie.
happy running around at daycare right now, probably.
Well, I know you caught a little bug from him last week. You're feeling better now.
Oh yeah, I'm feeling much better. I feel much more human this week.
Yeah,
But
it's
yeah, so
funny
it's
how
been.
that I remember those days because both my daughters are gone now. The nest is empty, but back in the day when they come home from school, there'd be about a lot of bugs here and there throughout the years. So you'll adjust. You'll get used to it. It's just part
Oh
of
yeah,
yeah.
no. Being a father has been an amazing, amazing journey. I'm just like loving every minute. Even when I was sick, I was like, "It's okay, you give me. I'm all right." But
Yeah, before I was going to ask you before you go. I mean, you've got, Caroline's doing really well. You've got a lot of your players who eventually they're going to, she's already playing professional squash. What if one day, or I'm sure she's already asked you, are you going to join me on this pro journey? I mean, you're a junior. You're the junior national team head coach, and that's been your thing for a while. Is the professional rank coaching at the professional level, is that something that you'd want to consider perhaps
yeah,
down the
I
road?
mean, yeah. Look, Caroline is establishing herself well with her career, right? And I've been a big part of that, and I don't think that relationship would just end just because I'm not traveling to all the events. I think she's going. We're gonna find a way throughout the next 4 years of college, to keep up with the training, the connection, like. We've been through so much at this point that is the relationship's going to be staying as is, all being well. But I'm so invested in my players that I strive to do my best for them. Events that I can travel to and be there as a support system, I will always be there when I can, whether it's a pro event or not. I strive to be involved with US squash. So with the Pan Ams, for example, that I did last year, and I want to kind of keep moving forward with that and staying involved. So She's going to be a big part of that. Hopefully, Nicholas Sposiri will be part of that in the future in his pro career. So I'm definitely going to be trying my best to stay involved with my players and helping those that kind of fall under the US network that I've worked with. Like I've always support Olivia Fichter. I've done some bits with her in the past, and I actually took her to Europe for a European tournament when she was 12. So, we've got a very great relationship as well off the court and friends and stuff. So like anything that I can do for players that I've come across with throughout the US squash system or through my own systems, I'm there, whether it's pro, junior or whatever, I'm all in.
Brilliant. Well, Luke, I really enjoyed this chat, and it's great meeting you, and continued success. You've done a great job with the US juniors, and it's going to be an exciting few years ahead as well. So all the best, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, likewise, I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you, and I love stuff like this where you speak to so many different people, because like I said, it's been part of my journey, right? Is learning from amazing people and talking to people who are passionate about the game of squash that we love, and it's a pleasure to be a part of it. So I thank you. So I appreciate you reaching out.